You're listening to Dose of Depth podcast. I'm your host, Deborah Lukovich, and I invite you to be curious about your unique experience of being human. In this podcast, we'll explore the deeper meaning of ordinary life experiences through conversation, stories, and education. You might have a serious aha moment, or you might just be amused by the movie your life seems to be imitating, or you might just be entertained by one of my awkward stories. I'm hoping you'll become more aware of those moments when a deeper part of you is prompting you to see things differently and maybe even go a new direction. So let's get started. Today, I'm excited to have a conversation with a guest about how our personal experience of life is unique and an expression of larger universal patterns of human experience. Over time, these patterns change. For example, what it means to be in relationship with others, or what it means to be feminine or masculine, or what justice and equality look like. Our personal experiences and how we find meaning are important because they reflect how these universal patterns want to evolve. One way we can become more aware of our personal role in evolving what it means to be a human being is by finding our personal stories in bigger stories. And then wondering if what we're experiencing, especially when it goes against convention or something new or something right, is it something that's pulling humanity forward, our personal experience? During my midlife unraveling and the beginning of my reconstruction, I became super sensitive to film images. I'd see certain films as many as 8 times, and I'd have dramatic insights about myself that had nothing to do with the script or what the director or the writer had intended. My film experiences were leading me somewhere, I was sure. With that in mind, I'm excited to introduce you to my new writer friend, J.D. Edwin. She is the author of Headspace, a science fiction novel. I loved Headspace, and as I read it, I felt like I was in a movie theater. It reminded me of the Netflix series called Alice in Borderland, which I also loved, and another series that I didn't like, so I'm not going to mention it. I began to see a theme, something new that's trying to emerge from the collective unconscious, something having to do with the dismantling of larger systems, which impact how we live. And the theme of being trapped in a game really intrigues me right now. So JD and I chatted a little bit, and here we are. We're going to have a conversation about the personal and the universal, or what I describe as the intersection between the personal and what wants to emerge from the collective unconscious as new versions of archetypal energies. Welcome, JD.
Thank you, Deborah. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
I'm JD Edwin. I currently live in Houston, Texas. I work in IT compliance by day. It's okay if you don't know what that is. I don't think many people do. But I like to tell people that I am corporate America by day and creative by night, which just means I don't get a whole lot of sleep. I've been a writer as long as I can remember, and it goes all the way back to being a kid and asking my parents to take dictation before I even learned to write. They were very patient people. I don't think I've ever gone very long without writing. And in addition to novels, I also write short stories and articles on writing for the Write Practice. I also give seminars on writing productivity and the process of launching and publishing a book.
Wow. Okay. I just want to linger in the image of you as a child dictating to your parents. Were they typing, or were they taking shorthand, or were they taking notes? Were you like sitting on a couch doing this, or was it over dinner? What did that look like?
This was the era before everybody had computers. So I would take printer paper and make my dad staple them into a book and say, I'm going to tell you my story and you're going to write it.
Oh my gosh. I love it. So they were supportive.
They were supportive. Yes.
That's great. So before we get to your book, I did want to give a shout out to something. You mentioned the Write Practice, and that's where you and I met. And I know you've been part of the Write Practice writing community for years. It's been about 18 months for me. And I think Number one, it's a great place to start if you're thinking about writing a book and you have a lot to learn. Like, I'm a scholarly writer and I was a professional writer, but I didn't really know anything about storytelling. And I just learned so much. You can just Google the right practice and I highly recommend it. And I don't know if you want to say anything else about the right practice, but I'm in love with that writing community.
Yes, absolutely. I have been part of the Write practice since 2013, back when they used to run on the forum. And for anybody listening, that's the Write practice, and Write is like writing, W-R-I-T-E. And these days they've grown so much. They are doing seminars, they're doing retreats, they have classes. And it's just the best community you can be a part of as a writer. I've used to have such trouble meeting and talking to people, but this is just such a great place to be a part of.
Yeah, great. Thanks. I wanted to make sure that we did that. So let's talk about your book. How did Headspace come about?
Well, when I was a teenager, when I first started really getting into writing, after my dictating to the parents' face, I used to be convinced that I was going to be a horror writer. Because I read Stephen King for years and years. I was obsessed with Stephen King. I read every single book and I was convinced I was gonna be the next Stephen King. I was gonna write scary stories and scare people. But unfortunately, as it turns out, I am not a scary person. I am not good at horror. So I ended up sitting down one day and thinking about, what is it that I want to write? And I realized that I've been daydreaming just this story in the back of my mind. And I wasn't even daydreaming about it to write it. It was just this idea that I had, and it burned away in my head for about 2 years. It's this story of a different kind of alien invasion, where Earth is forced to participate in this alien game show, and they broadcast it all over the world. And there's this unwilling protagonist named Astra, who, by the way, is named for Trillian Astra in Hitchhiker's Guide. And she's just this very unwilling participant, because I wanted this person who is not a chosen one. She's just this ordinary person. And she gets drafted against her will. And as she goes in, she realizes the whole world is way more obsessed with the sensationalism and the drama and the contestants as celebrities rather than the fact that the Earth might be destroyed. So after thinking about the story, I thought, well, I'm not coming up with any good horror ideas, obviously. So I might as well write this one. And I wrote it. And as it turns out, this is a story that I wanted to read, and I ended up writing it. So I guess that's a lesson in knowing yourself.
Yeah, I really love it. I love how you were obsessed with Stephen King and horror. That's for a reason. So there's something that all of that reading of Stephen King translated into you, I guess, ultimately, you know, having your own version of creativity.
I think so. Yeah, I learned a lot from Stephen King. He writes very immersive, very character-driven stories. And I used to think the only way I would be able to learn from him and write like that is through the same type of stuff he writes. But in actuality, I guess I picked up the skills I wanted and translated it to something else.
My wheels are just turning right now. And one of the things that I have fallen in love with is Jungian film theory. C.G. Jung, Carl Jung, some people know him as one of the fathers of depth psychology, the study of the unconscious, but a lot of people don't know that Jungian film theory is a growing field. And I realize that I'm very sensitive to the power of the image in film and books and music and just everyday experiences. He had this concept. He talked about psychological art versus visionary art, and psychological art being, well, you have sort of a pretty straightforward experience of the story in the way that the writer and the director intended. But when something unexpected happens or explosive happens, that's visionary art. When reactions to it are, you know, also there's irrational reactions to it, either good or negative, it really means that something new is bubbling up, and it's a reflection of something new that wants to come out of our collective unconscious. And it's scary to some people because the status quo is safe. So when I read your book, Headspace, I love that I don't know exactly what's pulling me, but one of these themes about like being trapped in games where you didn't really write the rules, like this is just very intriguing for me. I go back to when I was coming of age in the 1980s, there was this movie, Thelma and Louise, which ended up being in the National Film Registry for its cultural contribution. But the movie, I loved it. And so many women were like, yes, when we saw that them blow up that trucker, the semi-truck, and when they drove off the cliff because they wanted, you know, they choose death over oppression. But there was this backlash against it by especially male reviewers, that it was like they were scared of the anger that would have been unleashed, you know, by the collective unconscious that had to do with women. So, and even more currently, my experience of watching Alita Battle Angel, really my experience sort of surprised me. But anyway, this is so good because I can't put my finger on exactly what it is about Headspace, but, and that's what's perfect about it is that I don't know. You're not really telling me how to experience the story. There's something for me to explore. Yeah, so
actually what I was going to ask you just now when you mentioned the psychological art versus the visionary art, right? You can't really control how people react to what you create. So wouldn't the difference between psychological and visionary art be up to the receiver?
Well, right. That's the thing about Jungian film theory that's different from other sorts of schools of thought is that, you know, for example, during a 2-year time period when I was, you know, being all sensitive to mostly these superhero films, I was having responses that I don't have anymore when I see them. So there was this intersection between the images on the screen and where I was in my life. And actually in Jungian film theory, there's this concept called the third image, and it's the space between the screen or the book or the words on the page and your unconscious. And so depending on where you are, the images on the page or the screen sort of cause an alchemical thing to happen in your unconscious. And most people aren't really aware of it, so they don't really think about it. But I love thinking about this when it has to do with my own life, but also helping other people sort of explore their own experiences when they are reading a novel or they're watching a film or they have a really interesting experience to a song. So yeah, this is why I was so excited to talk with you. Tell me a little bit more about, you know, what are the underlying sort of ideas or motivations or concepts as you wrote this story?
I have this fascination with ordinary people. And that really goes back to, again, my roots was reading Stephen King. Is Stephen King writes what I call small stories. He focuses on the people in the story rather than this big situation. There are some people who really like big worlds and world politics, but I prefer to be about the individual. Have you watched a movie called, it's a pretty old movie now, Signs with Mel Gibson?
Yes.
Yes, that movie. I love that movie. A lot of people did not. Did you enjoy?
I love that movie. I thought the imagery, you know, I think a lot of people get caught up in very fast-paced, big effects, and there's no time to like linger in the images. And I think one of the things I really appreciated about that movie, Signs, is it slowed down, but the imagery was very powerful.
Yes, that whole movie was about this one family and how they dealt with this great big thing that's happening in the world, which they never really directly address. Like, it's pretty obvious what's happening. There's this alien invasion, but you have this one family there and you're following them and how they deal with this situation. And it was so personal being able to tell a personal story, I feel like it's so much stronger than telling this great big world where you just get this overview of everything.
I love it. And that's exactly sort of what, you know, how I introduced this conversation was about the world experience is made up of the accumulation of all of our individual personal stories. So I love that you focus on that. You also talk about sort of bringing the young adult sort of concept or archetypes into adult fiction. Talk a little bit more about that.
So there's, you know, YA is such a big thing right now. In the last, I want to say 10 years, the young adult novel genre has just exploded. And the thing about young adult stories is there's not a lot of frills. In adult fiction, there's a lot of focus on language and world building and, you know, a certain level of maturity, whereas YA novels tend to go straight to the point, to the action, to the characters. And I've been told before that I wrote my book like it's a YA fiction for adults. That was not my original intention. But after I wrote it, I could see how people would feel that way because I wanted to write a story that is all story. And this is another one of Stephen King's lessons in his book on writing is every word should be story. And this is especially obvious in Harry Potter, which has no wasted words. Harry Potter does not waste words. Every word is story. You don't get slow pace. You don't get buildup. You don't get sitting there waiting, reading a scene being described, which this is something that classical fiction tends to do. But it's also something that is regarded as high fiction, adult fiction, but YA fiction, it's straightforward, it's exciting, it's direct to the point. And I feel like we're missing right now for overall a category of fiction for adults that's just fun to read. And I don't feel like just reading for fun should just be for young people. Adults deserve to have fun too, and adults deserve to have stories. That's just story.
I didn't know that your book was a young adult book. I mean, I really enjoyed it. You have brought together two things. You brought together a book that adults really like to read, but like you said, it's fun. And so it is sort of brings those two things together. One of the things that we really enjoyed talking about was this idea of archetypes and universal themes. And there's a couple that you really like to explore. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, I feel like this is ironically became really relevant in the last 2 years being in the pandemic. And I don't know about you, but I've never been more aware of the news than in these last 2 years. Mm-hmm. Are you the same way?
Yeah, yes. I mean, more than I'd like to be.
Yes. Before the pandemic happened, I was really not all that aware of the news because a lot of things happen in the world, but it doesn't impact you directly very much. But these last 2 years, everyone has been impacted with what's going on. And even though I wrote this story before the pandemic, I even made a reference in the book to like, oh, the aliens are invading, everybody's like panic buying, like it's going to make the difference. But this need for information, this over need for information, hunger for information and entertainment and sensationalism, even the pandemic has been sensationalized because that's how our media works.
Absolutely.
And I imagined originally in this story, when I first thought about this situation where aliens invade and they force Earth to play this game for its survival. And I just thought, if this happened, all the news outlets would be all over it. Everybody would be talking about it and figuring out how they can make money off it, how they can get more clickbait out of it.
Yes, exactly.
because that's what would happen. And the people who participate will obviously become household names because everybody would know who they are. It's been broadcasted. And what would happen in a situation like that? In a more idealized story, you may find that people talk about, oh, people become, they become the hero of the people. People worship them and root for them. But that's not how it would happen.
Mm-hmm.
In reality, the public would pick these people apart because they are famous and they are known. And that's this universal theme of prejudice and the expectations put on people, even though the people themselves don't want it.
I'm just thinking back to your book. That was one of the, you know, one of the things that elicited emotion from me, an emotional response, is sort of this disappointment that, you know, this is not your typical hero's journey story, which is an ideal and kind of a black and white presentation of the archetype. And the world is too complex for that now. And I think your story really makes that clear, that even the life of a hero is a complex experience. And, you know, that leads me to say, you know, I think the most brilliant art, whether it's music, a film, a novel, or anything else, is that you're moved by it, that it envelops you, but you don't know exactly why or what the meaning is. So, you know, this new presentation of an old story is reflecting the evolution of humanity. So, you know, your book just presents, it presents dilemmas, but it, and the dilemmas are kind of old, but it presents them in a really, really creative way, which I think is why your book is just great. And of course, science fiction for me has always been about the human experience. Most people, you know, want to just experience it as entertainment. But for me, it's like, oh no, these stories, I see what's going on here. But science fiction is wonderful because the stories are symbolic and they use imagery. They're not literal. So the imagery makes them more powerful. And nobody's telling you how to think. They're actually able to work on your unconscious. And even if you don't think they're working on your unconscious, they are. You just aren't really aware of it. So, JD, is there anything else that you want to tell our listeners about your book and, you know, how it came to be? And then also how, I think you might have something for listeners, and where do they find you and your book, and how can they support you?
Yes, my website is www.jdedwin.com. If you go to my website, I do have a link where you can get a free book of short stories. I do have the sequel currently and the prequel currently in the works. The prequel is actually due out this summer, and I'm very excited about it. The prequel is actually going to explore the bigger world behind Headspace and how these games came about. And I feel like it's a story that even more reaches into the collective conscious, where we learn that not just humans share these principles and values and universal themes, but out there are others like us. So I'm very excited about that.
JD, I'm super excited. I'm a relatively newcomer to the writing world, and so I know what world building means now, but I think you do a fantastic job of world building, and I can see how the prequel is just really going to blow that up. So I've super enjoyed our conversation. And thank you for taking time to be on. Listeners, I hope you've enjoyed this conversation. And it's something different than what you've heard on other podcasts. We're sort of bringing together, you know, my passion about inviting people to explore the deeper meaning of everyday life experiences, And then how to do that through, you know, one of those everyday experiences is the reading of a novel or the watching of a movie or experiencing a song and, you know, in a way that was unexpected. And your unique experience of being human is contributing to something new unfolding in our quest to evolve. And your experiences with fiction can bring dramatic insights about the purpose of your own life in the bigger picture. You can actually work with your experiences of a film or reading a novel just like you would a dream. If a film or a book or a song or a Netflix series has a pull on you, like Stephen King did on you, there's something to explore if you're interested in doing a little detective work. So I have a couple PDFs you can download from my website, deborahlukovich.com. They're in the Newsletters Plus section. And thanks so much, everyone, for joining me and J.D. Edwin, the author of Headspace, for our conversation about the intersection between your unique human experience and how it fits into the larger collective forces pushing us to evolve. Until next time. I'm your host, Deborah Lukovich, and you are listening to Dose of Depth podcast. To get updates on new episodes, my writing, and how I teach my clients to get to know that deeper part of themselves, go to deborahlukovich.com. Oh, and if you're not ready for a coach, learn what my clients know in my book, Your Soul is Talking. Are you listening? 5 Steps to Uncovering Your Hidden Purpose. You can check it out on my website or get it on Amazon.